Welcome to the ITM Podcast.
This is episode 194 of the ITM Podcast, the official Boston Red Sox podcast of CLNS Media, brought to you by Prize Picks. And the Boston Red Sox might have a starting rotation. I'm Joey Capone. That's Scott Neville. Scott, what?
What you said. I don't think there's really anything to add.
I mean, listen, I don't want to overreact here, but I have about five times already in the past 4 days here. As the Boston Red Sox kick off the 2024 season in Seattle, game one had the potential to just be a flash in the pan of like, oh yeah, you know, it's Bayo and things are what things are. But it consisted, bro. What a series. It was a split, but what a series from ye olde Boston Red Sox. Obviously, the talk of the tape is the rotation looking stellar. Is that too grand of an adjective?
No, not at all. I mean, they all went at least five. I think Cutter and Pivetta went six, if I'm not mistaken. And I mean, what did they give up? Like two runs? Like what was the whole rotation? It was low. It wasn't many.
I'll tell you, they pitched 22 innings combined, four earned runs, which is a 1.64 ERA for the rotation, 27 strikeouts. And this one blew my mind. One walk.
Yeah, that's the craziest part about it. And everyone looked good. It wasn't a lot of warning track shots, got hit around, good defense. It was just like a lot of swing and misses. Like you said, not walking people. Pivetta had 17 whiffs. Like they were just balling the whole time.
Pivetta's probably the one worth talking about the most because that we did get four good starts, but I think Pivetta was the most impressing, promising, however you want to put it, not surprising, probably the least surprising, because we did talk about it last week, just how he seemed like the most posed to take a step forward. But his command, bro, when he pitches angry, dude, he might be one of my favorite pitchers to watch in baseball when he pitches angry. And that was game two of the season, playing a team on the other side of the country. Like, as the year goes and as he actually has like a reason to get pissed, I think Pivetta is like must watch TV.
Do you think though for him, he was a little more juiced up because he was only a 2 hour ferry away, as you said in your pitching preview?
Honestly, I mean, I think his family probably was in the building, right? Like, I don't think they mentioned it on the broadcast, but like they had to be. I think just being, is it that Canadian air seeping in a little bit?
Maybe that was, and that would make sense because O'Neill. Also, very good, the series.
He also, I'm pretty sure, grew up like around the corner. I'm pretty sure he was not far. Maybe? Am I making that up? There was somebody else.
No, I don't know. He's Canada. That's all I know. He's Canada. He could be from anywhere in Canada.
I don't even think
he needs to be. His dad's Mr. Canada. Did you ever hear that? They don't ever talk about that.
You know what? It's crazy because they did mention that about 11 times on this broadcast. I did catch that. He was Mr. Canada. Which, like, if you're going to enter any kind of bodybuilding competition, I understand you want to be like Mr. Your Country. Mr. Canada just has no, like, aura to it. To be like a Mr. Canada.
Yeah, but he's jacked.
That's a great point. It's a great point. He is jacked. I don't know who it was. There was somebody else that was right near home. But it felt like part of it for Pivetta too was the fact that he's starting the year in the rotation, you know, after a year where he was obviously kicked out of the rotation and was pretty vocal about not wanting to be kicked out and pushing back. I mean, there was a good portion last year where we thought that he could just refuse to pitch out of the bullpen. Because there were situations like that. I'm pretty sure that happened to him in Philly. And I remember Philly fans being in my mentions being like, this happened before, where like he went to the bullpen and he stomped his feet and he sucked. And then like we got rid of him. So like there was a fear that that happened again.
And then he liked it so much that even when he started starting, he ran out of the bullpen.
Right. I forgot about
that. Doing that anymore, but he made a big stink out of it. And he was like, yo, guys, I know I was bitching earlier. I kind of love it here. This is kind of awesome. I kind of like this a lot.
What if, or it could be the other way around where he's like, hey, like, you know how I'm giving you the most innings right now? Here I come out of the bullpen where you put me.
Okay. I like that too.
Yeah. That seems more like him to be like, I'm a reliever, right? I'll be over here if you guys need me. He's awesome, dude. He's scary. He's genuinely scary. I've always thought that he seems like a guy who views himself as like a veteran, which I guess he kind of is.
Yeah, he is.
He is, but like
he's always been like a fourth starter, and that kind of takes away the appeal.
And I don't know. Is he wearing the number two crown like a little heavy? Is he like kind of owning that with his chest? Like, I am the number two guy.
Probably. Yeah. Be? I mean, he did not. I mean, he almost punched Cotillo in the face. When he was moved to the bullpen last year. So I think he enjoys the rotation role a little bit.
I didn't post the full clip. I did tweet it during the game, but the full clip that you're talking about, when he looks at Cotillo and he says, well, I don't really understand your question. It is it is scary, bro. It looks a lot like he's about to hit that man.
Yeah. I mean, the thoughts he must have had in that moment from both sides, I would love to know.
I might have to ask Chris.
Have you not done that yet?
I'll just text him right now. Be like, thought Nick Pivetta might hit you?
Do you remember that time Pivetta almost strangled you in the locker room? Any thoughts? Clubhouse? Whatever? Thoughts?
Thoughts? You are on the record? Dude, Pivetta deserved better. He deserved better. With six innings pitched, one earned on a homer. And up to this point, all of the earned runs, all but one earned run in this whole series from starters came off homers. It's just so weird. Baseball makes no sense, man. It's just the exact opposite story of what we were told this team was going to be. That like the offense is going to have to carry the rotation and whatever. Just the exact opposite. Just the exact opposite. Just a 1-0 loss. I mean, I guess it's Kirby. It makes sense. It's George Kirby. If there's a guy that like early in the year that you're going to struggle offensively against, it would make sense. But it's just weird, man.
Yeah, I think it was just the worst matchup we could have had for those four starts that we got. Because the way the Red Sox pitched was like an elite four. They're not going to be that. But they gave like hey, we're the best rotation in baseball this very second. And we just happen to be facing the actual best rotation in baseball this very second. I don't know if anybody has a 1-4 that competes with Seattle. And then our offense, you know, needs Devers, I guess, or we're screwed.
Yeah, I mean, it was his shoulder, right? It was some shoulder tightness.
Left shoulder. I feel like that's going to be kind of important. He swung and missed today in a way that I was like, oh, he's done. He didn't react in any way. But there was a swing and miss early, late in this game where I was like, ah, there's no way he's playing tomorrow.
I didn't expect to see him in game four. I don't know why he did play in game four.
No.
That didn't make a whole bunch of sense.
I have no idea. And then he played third, too. I thought for sure they'd have him DH the first game back. But
that's the thing with the outfield, bro. That's the thing with the outfield is that you can't stick Yoshida out there. I mean, I guess you could. You could have stuck him in place of, like, Willier. But still,
you certainly could have
a weird series from Willier. People were beyond high on Willier, and people still are, and the bat tool and all that, and you know his expected numbers are crazy, and his exit velo numbers are crazy, and all that. But like, I don't want to overreact to this series whatsoever. But taking the smallest step back on Willier Abreu, might not be the worst decision.
I agree with that. I was high on him last year. I mean, the guy hit like 317 or something when he came up.
Yeah.
But I also liked the approach. Like, it wasn't, you know, he was hitting balls with authority. It seemed like he did strike out a lot, but his decision-making wasn't terrible. I'm noticing, I mean, again, very early, but he's missing balls in the zone, and that's what you hate to see, is when they're swinging at balls in the zone, they just can't hit them. He's played two games. So it was more just, I'm not worried about the bat at all right now. Everything else was concerning because, you know, he got picked off. I don't know if we're going to go game by game. We should wait on that, or we just do it now, but.
Yeah, I mean, just go for it. Just go for it.
Okay. Yeah. So he got picked off, and that was like the big thing people talked about in game four. But right before that, he almost got thrown out on a very clear, like it was kind of a tweener, but there was at least like 3 seconds where it was like, oh, he's going to catch this ball. And he just kept like taking hesitation, like little steps towards second, and then almost got gunned out at first, tagging, like just going halfway. And that was just so, I don't know. I get that he was in a bad spot there, but. There was a time where they showed the replay from like the dugout, and it was like, oh man, right there he should have known. And then it's like step, oh crap. So I didn't love that.
And the defense too, dude. It's like we're talking all aspects of the game right now. We're talking he's missing stuff in the zone, the base running.
Yeah.
It was looking ugly. And the defense, there was a couple instances. I mean, obviously near the end of game three, he has the error out there. And then I didn't love the game four thing. Did you think that was weird? Dude, that struck me a lot. The conversation, I guess you want to call collision. It. Yeah, the kind of collision. And then the conversation afterwards where Jaron was like kind of patting him and smiling, being like, I don't know, trying to make it right. It just felt weird. The vibes in that felt very strange to me.
Well, Jaron,
that's probably reading too much, but I don't know.
For me, it wasn't even that. It's just the fact it pissed me off that he took like he hit him with like a my bad. And I was like, no, that was Willier. You could see Duran calling it verbally and with hand movement. I know the hand movement, you're looking at the ball. I think that's the most overrated thing. I don't know why outfielders do that. It never helped anybody when I was an awesome baseball player in my youth. But the yelling, he was clearly yelling in his direction, and then he hit him. And then he was like, oh, my fault. It's like, no, center fielder. Like, it's your ball. And so I don't know what Willier was doing. I don't like that Duran was just like, my bad. I think he should have been like, yo, we're playing Major League Baseball right now. The center fielder has priority. I feel like you should know that right now.
And I feel like they still played it right, where, like, Duran did cut him underneath. It's like what you're supposed to do. And, like, they didn't even really collide. That was the other thing. It's like, what is there to be frustrated about? We both went for a ball. He got the ball.
Yeah, but he just shouldn't have been there. Like, the frustrating thing is the communication is bad. And so, like that, it worked out that time. But if that's going to be a trend, I'm not feeling great.
Yeah, I mean, new outfield partners, new-ish.
I played the minors, I feel like. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not, because he came over from Houston, Willier. Played together in Worcester, but it definitely wasn't like years. It was, I feel like that was when Duran was up and down.
Yeah.
Maybe they have. I guess maybe, but that's what the whole month of spring training is for, I would think.
You would think. And it's the same kind of thing in the infield with, you know, Story getting all prepped to work with Grissom, that not happening. And it ending up being Valdez, who, so this week, my buddy hit me up. And he was like, you know, I want to get into the Sox this year. And I was like, well, why do you want to do that? He's like, you know, I want to get into the ground floor. I want to get back into baseball. Fill me in. He's like, I haven't watched since 2019. What's been going on?
Oh, tough starting point there.
Yeah. So I gave him, you know, a long paragraph of like, you know, Mookie, full throttle, all of the in-betweens. And then I went through the roster and gave, you know, just like little bullet points on everybody, and got to Valdez. And the only bullet point I put with him, this is rude, was doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I was like, you don't need
to
know.
This series. He did today.
He did is the thing. He did. He totally did matter is the thing. But like, he's the guy, like if you're coming in and you're just learning about the Boston Red Sox and you're like, fill me in. I felt okay being like, you don't bother. He's here for a little bit.
Yeah.
He's going to be fine. He's going to have flashes. He's going to have his moments. But like this, very much like Pablo Reyes, like these are the moments. It's always when the team needs it the most, which is something that it always comes at a time when like the offense is struggling. And then you just get like a 3-run homer from Valdez to put you over. But I'm still, I mean, God bless him.
I love him because he just rakes, but he can't feel the ball at all. The double play in the first game was impressive. I was surprised he was able to do that. The one game...
He looked a little ugly.
He got it. It was a rocket, and that's all that matters because he needed to throw it hard. The one ball he didn't throw hard where I would have said, let's use your fastball, was when the runner, the game-winning runner, game-tying run, was trying to score, and he just kind of threw a lob from like 40 feet away. I would have used the fastball on that one, but what are you going to do?
Speaking of run scoring and speaking of Jaren Duran a minute ago, we got to talk about game one.
The home.
That was fucking weird. What was going on there? Dude, so in case you missed it, don't know why you're listening to the show, but ninth inning of game one? Game one.
Yeah, game one.
Cassis at the plate, Duran on third. Duran leads 2/3, 3/4 of the way to home, like a body's length away from the plate. And right before that, Yuke had pointed out that like Cassis is looking down the line and he's saying, you know, being a left-handed hitter, that's right in front of you. And Cassis had said something to him right before he took that big lead. What he said, we don't know. Jimmy O'Brien, get on it, please.
Probably just stop screwing up my at bat, dude. Either go or don't go. That's probably that's what I would have said.
That's
he can see him. And that was the only thing he did was he just screwed up Casas and he didn't do anything. He like had his hand hovering over the base and was like, I could touch it. I could touch it. And then he ran home. I don't know what happened or third.
I don't know why he didn't is the thing. Like Duran loves that stuff. He loves being that dynamic guy.
Yeah, I got somebody text being like, what was that? Like, what's the advanced baseball thing I don't know about on that one? Because it looked like he could have just got a run there. And isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? Isn't that the point?
That's the point. That's the point of the game.
Nobody
in a lot of ways. I don't know what that was, but like, I did like their interaction after where Cassis is kind of like smiling, but also being like, ah, man, probably should have just not done exactly what you just fucking did, man.
Well, we're still buds, but what was that? What do we? Wow. I mean, either do it or don't do it. You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of hit here.
Because I don't think there's any doubt that he easily could have. I mean, I know we've said that like three times, but like to be like as serious as I possibly can, he had the ability to score and just didn't.
He was 2/3 of the way down with a ball in the pitcher's hand. It would have been, I would argue, there's a chance he didn't need to slide. It was going to be easy. There's a screenshot of the pitcher still with the ball and him legitimately 2/3 of the way down. Still the fastest man alive at that point, too. So I think a lot of people could have scored from there. Certainly him. I don't know. I think maybe he just didn't realize how far along. He probably started that being like, I'm going to throw him off, get halfway. There's no one on the bag. And then he just kept going. And then when he started to run back, he was probably like, oh, wow. I got like 70 feet here. How did that happen?
I think there's also an element. Stop me if I'm stupid here. I think there's also an element of sliding into home amid an at-bat that it's like scary.
With Casas swinging? Yeah, I wouldn't it.
No. And to slide directly at him, too, being that he's a lefty.
You have to go sliding through his legs?
Yeah. Like, with, like, a baseball coming at you as well. Like, I think it's also that it's hard to pull the trigger to do. But regardless, that was weird. I live for that kind of shit, though. I don't care that it probably did mess up that at-bat. It certainly did. I live for that. I live for like a new camera angle during a live broadcast. Like they cut to that like low behind home angle. I'm like, what is this? Why are we here? What's going on?
Didn't feel
like a game one situation. Couple other things from opening day. Tyler O'Neill God bless him. Addicted to opening day home runs. Cannot stop doing it. Fifth straight one. Major League Baseball history. Leads the Red Sox, or helps lead the Red Sox, to Alex Cora's first opening day win. Which, of all seasons, it just makes too much sense.
Yeah.
It seemed like he did care, because he brought it up.
Yeah, I think you just have a general sense of wanting to get the year off started, right? And I feel like that's just, you know, five straight losses or whatever. It's been six or something like that. Just a kick in the nuts every year. Just like, oh, especially if you remember 2018, I still remember this. Joe Kelly blew a game on opening day, you know, like the eighth or ninth or something, where they did have the lead. They were up like two when they blew it. And so then it was like, man, you almost had it there. And then we've been bad for quite some time, Joey. I don't know if you knew that. So, I don't know why it would matter, but Boston Red Sox. Yeah, Boston, but I don't know why he would care, but also, like, I guess when you're in the moment, you're probably sitting there going, you know, it's weird. Like, I don't think he's thinking about it in May and June much, but I think on the day every year, he's like, five in a row, how does that keep happening? It was like the player, remember the nickname thing that weekend that they used to do?
Yeah, Players Weekend, yeah.
Yeah, we and the Red Sox would just get blown out every single game. And it was like, this is not fun for me. This is supposed to be a fun thing. And now every time you tell me that we're going to have nicknames, I just think about how many losses we're going to have by how much. I think that might be it too.
Yeah, we're like, you don't think about it till it's there. Because the same thing. And then it was fly like over,
lose by seven every year for Cora. That's what he was like, oh man, new season, I'm about to get trampled. That's how this works.
Has he won a Fenway opener?
I
want to check that because I know they didn't last year. Corey Kluber.
Yeah, it wasn't good. 2022. I couldn't tell you either of those years.
I'm going to say,
we don't got to worry about 2020. We got to worry about that. So,
yeah, I'm going to chalk that one up as an L. I'm going to go ahead and say they probably lost that one.
Well, he wasn't there either way.
No, that's the thing.
That's what I mean. That's why it doesn't matter. What you meant. Yeah.
Renicky.
Yep. Yep, Ronnie, as they all called him.
Does Ronnie Wren have a better opening day record than Alex Cora? Do we need to look this up? Is it worth looking up?
Certainly not. That team went 20-40, so statistically they probably lost.
It's more likely 20-40 on the nose.
I did like the 20-40 on the nose was clean, and I appreciated that about that team.
No, that was a good decision on their part, too, to just be like, there are 60 games. We lose
two-thirds.
Two out of every three of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If we play three games, we lose two. If it's a three-game series, we lose the series. That's what we do.
And we're going to be the fourth worst team, and we're going to get the best player in the draft anyway, because that's how that's going to work. Because that was high magic at that time. That's over now. People gave him credit for letting the best player in the draft fall to him as if he had control over that in some manner. Anyway, the Seattle Mariners. We've just played them.
The other thing from opening day was that frantic mound visit. I didn't see anybody else talking about this. I don't think anybody else really cares about this, but I do. That frantic mound visit near the end for Kenley facing Luke Bailey. Like, they pinch hit Luke Bailey and damn near sprinted to the field with the binder to be like, Kenley.
He must have had something. I have a feeling that's not something where it's like, oh, this guy's important. I think it's more just, we know something very specific about this person. Like, oh, he's not going to hit your cut. Do not throw anything but a cut. Like, something where he's hitting 056 on a certain pitch or whatever, and he was like, this would be malpractice to not give him this piece of advice. That's the only thing that makes sense to me, is if they had something on him so specific and like effective that they were like, we have to, like, this is information he needs to have.
I also think part of it is Cora really wanting that opening day win, not just for the record and not just to snap his streak and whatever, but really wanting to come out of the gate with a W. I mean, the very fact that they went, you know, Martin Jansen to close out game one. Like, it's even that says, like, I hate that my brain is so broken that when I see, you know, our two best late relievers come in, I'm like, oh God, we're using them both. Like, now what? Now what's going to happen? And like, that's not a good reaction. It should just be like, hell yeah, there they are. But I've been accustomed to just believe that's a bad thing because now they're unavailable. Which I guess you can get lost in a sea of despair doing that. But more than the Cora's record, dude, I mean, he talked about how high the vibes were at spring training, right? If they gave out trophies for vibes, we'd be right in the mix. And the Red Sox social is posting the boys twerking in the dugout before the game. I think if they had come out and lost game one of the year, either blowing it late or if they had just from the jump been crushed, if it was like, you know, a 13-1 loss, that's debilitating. That would have been soul crushing. So I think like chasing that win, if there was one to chase, I think that's well worth it. I think it says a lot. I don't know, you know, how much analytics agree and all that. We're talking definitely like from the heart here, but I think that matters to come out of the gate with a W there after vibes are all you got. Like, you can't lose that right away.
I think it's important because we are basing the team success off vibes this year to bookend, because now you're the first win. Obviously that's, you know, opening day win. That's fun. How fun is that? And then pre-plane ride win. That's a huge one, you know, especially pre-show win. It goes into the next series and you're like, we're good again. Like, we're fine. So if they just keep bookending, forget the fact that that means most of the time they're going 2 out of 3, they're actually be good. But that's how you do it. If you're just trying to do vibes, throw the middle game away every time. No one cares about the middle game.
If there were any two games that you would want them to win, they won them. They did it. They picked the right two. For the two middle games, I mean, we just said they don't matter. They don't matter. Pavetta, 1-0 game on a homer. Kirby being Kirby is what it is. Game three was a little uglier. Cutter looked great. 3 hits over 6 innings, 7 strikeouts. Defensive issues. The thing is, because of the last 2 years, any amount of defensive issues, even if they're, you know, 15th in errors and in defensive runs saved and every other defensive metric you want to look at, even if they're right in the middle of the pack, it's going to feel so much worse because we got so much riding on the defense. And because that was such a point that was driven home so much coming into the year, that it would be better. So it just hurts. It just hurts extra. Every error, every dropped ball is going to be a little tougher. Just try to look at the numbers. Try to look at the numbers. They'll be okay. They'll be all right.
Normally, I think you're a fool and a moron, but that take about fielding, I couldn't agree more. I think that because the second the Pablo throw was a hilarious error. I mean, not in the moment, but what a grotesque throw that was. I mean, it was – Costas took 3 steps and dove and was like 7 feet away from that ball. He threw that ball so far foul, and he did it like – with so little velo, that should have been impossible. And it was just like, oh, here we go. And now we got the right fielder coming in to field the ball that was originally hit the third. And now we're looking at, you know, the 2023 Sox again. That one was just beautiful.
Again, it's like, in retrospect, it's wicked funny. In the moment, we were like, no.
Immediately,
no,
I said, here we are. Like, I was like, this is us. This is us again.
Yeah. There was this time last year where it got funny.
Yeah.
There was a big time last year where it wasn't funny at all.
Yeah. Well, it got to a point where we were playing for a draft pick there. It's not so much a bigger deal in baseball, but there was a good, I mean, September was just not, just take a look at my page views, the listenership view, you know, September was tough for all of us. And at that point you just had to revel in one of the worst defensive teams ever assembled in the Statcast era.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were number two.
Yeah.
Number two all time in the Statcast era in terms of, and by two, I mean 376 out of 377. or whatever it is. I think it's actually more than that. I think it was in the 400s. But yeah, it was like, I think it was the Mets in 17.
It was the Mets. I don't remember what year.
Yeah, I think it was those the only defensively worse team than the 2023 Boston Red Sox. But yay, a new year is upon us. Don't let it get you down. It's one game. That was funny. What's not funny is how Justin Slayton's MLB career started.
That when I saw them roll him out there again today with two on, I was just like, what did he do? And what did he do to deserve this? I understand the reaction is, what are we doing? And then you break it down and, Jansen had a tummy ache and he slept wrong. And so he was unavailable. And then
he didn't want to play today.
He said, I don't want to play today. So that was a not thing. And then Chris Martin is 86 years old, so he shouldn't be pitching back-to-back days in March, actually. And, then everyone else is just new, pretty much. So it was just, and we have one lefty on the whole team. Our best lefty, where's he? He's in Worcester for some reason. And so, because flexibility. But Jason Anderson's there, and they didn't want to go to him because guess what? Because he stinks. And they knew that in the moment. They were like, well, that guy sucks, so we won't use him. Bernardino would have been perfect for this situation, but we don't have him.
Alas, so, he's wearing a Woo Sox jersey. And then you get past right that, now.
And it's like, yeah. And so then it was like, okay, it's either Slayton or Chase Anderson, essentially, was the call. And that's the right call, I think. And he's our new closer now. So get him some experience Saturday because he just became the new closer on Sunday. So I think that was a good move. Julio Rodriguez, too, hilarious. Extra funny there was Julio Rodriguez in that situation up at bat.
I mean, it's like rookie hazing to a new level to be like, yeah, dude, get out there. Dude, you know what would be wicked funny is if we put out Justin Slayton right now. Put him in there. Yeah. Let's do it.
Hey, this guy's never played before. What if we threw him into this spot?
Either
that or the 36-year-old with a 6 ERA. All right, we're doing it. Let's do it. Let's do it. I guess we'll roll him out there. Is Kenley still crying? He is. Okay, all right, bring in the kid.
All right, here's the thing with like all of that. There's like 12 important things to get to in everything that you just said. But like the Joely Bernardino thing is so gross, and it's what the Red Sox are, but they're like half in on being that. So in case you don't know, if you're still scratching your head, like why is Bernardino in Worcester? Basically came down to the fact that Joely doesn't have options. So like, if you want to keep Joely, you have to keep him on the major league roster.
And he also opted out of that deal. So they had to put him on the roster. They lose him.
Yes. Which
same thing. I mean, yeah.
Yes. So they have to have him on the major league roster. So if you want to keep the guy who stinks, you have to play the guy who stinks. So they put in the guy who stinks. Bernardino has, I think he has two options, actually, two option years. And so he goes down to Worcester. I don't necessarily agree that he was the bottom of that list and that you have to only have one lefty. I would argue you should probably have more than one lefty on your entire team. But here we are. Joely, through his first two appearances, do you want to guess his ERA right now and his whip?
20.25.
That's unbelievable. It's 20.25. I'm not even going to ask. I know you didn't look that up. I know you didn't. I know you wouldn't do that to me.
I mean,
I know you, man. I know you, and I know you have respect for the segment. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. He did pitch today.
So that can't be accurate still.
No, it is.
How does that work?
It's through, I think that's through both appearances, isn't it? Isn't that number include both times? Oh, he pitched three times in this series, didn't he?
Yeah, they had to use their weapons. They have one lefty. He's going to pitch every day. There's going to be a lefty that comes up for the other team every game. So he's going to pitch every day. I feel like I saw it be 20. Obviously, I mean, I didn't see, obviously, I know that. I just did the math in my head. So 20.25. But he might have got it down today.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. Two innings and three earned runs. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that brings it right down quite a bit. So it's actually, what is that? 13.5.
That's pretty good.
13.5. That's a significant drop.
If you told me going into a game, this guy balled out so hard that he dropped his ERA 6 points, wouldn't you be like, that must have been a game? He must have pitched 20 innings. Seven. Yeah. So even better.
Brought his ERA down by almost seven full runs.
And now someone might be like, wait, why was it ever above seven runs? But that's not what we're focusing on here. It's the growth.
It's growth. That's what it's all about. Yeah, I mean, that's,
yeah. So anyway, the whole
could be gross with him.
The Bernardino thing almost made sense to me. Had Chris Murphy not exploded, and it was him in the bullpen, and they went with him and Jolie, and then Bernardino's going to come up when the first guy pulls his hamstring or whatever. That to me is like okay, but then when again, it just comes down to why Chase Anderson over Brendan Bernardino? Why force a righty who is worse than Brendan Bernardino onto the roster? What are we missing? And they don't even trust him to pitch. So what do we – I mean, Cora, then, like, we had the situation, and he said, no, let's go with the Rule 5 guy. We don't – let's roll with the kid.
Let's keep him. Throw him back out there.
So, that's what blows my mind.
It's weird. It's definitely weird. But I will say – Andrew Bailey, if you are responsible for why things look the way they look right now, I'm willing to eat a little bit of crow. Because I was a little harsh coming out of the gate, especially with Lucas Giolito getting hurt and pretty low on the idea that Andrew Bailey. Yep. Yeah, Lucas. Yeah, he got hurt, dude.
Oh, my God.
Google it, man.
I was wondering. I was like, I thought he was a fifth star. I have to Google it? Okay.
No, dude, it's Tanner Houck, dude. They got Tanner. Remember the closer Tanner Houck? He's gonna start again.
Well, no, I know we have Tanner. He's gonna be like a swingman. Yeah, like a swingman type thing. Giolito. For some reason, book it. Oh, is it like maybe like a relay race where you anchor it?
Unfortunately, no. He's gonna be starting. He's in the rotation. Tanner Houck. Yeah, surgery for Giolito. Out the whole year, man.
So Giolito didn't even make the rotation. That I feel like that flew under the rug. I feel like people aren't talking about that nearly enough. $20 million a year to be what? Swingman?
Yeah, thanks, Craig. Not even as well. Nice move, pal. Nope. $20 million to take a seat, actually, to chill, to ice his arm is what it's actually going to be. You're not doing anything, man.
Oh, well. Yeah. It's not like you could have gotten someone else for the similar price range that was like much more established and like led a team to a World Series. So I get it. You know, sometimes it's just a tough year. Bad class, I'm sure.
Yeah.
If there was some like generational 25-year-old talent and then like this National League Cy Young winner and, you know, a World Series champion, like if like all of those guys were available and that's what you went with, I would have been like, what are you doing? But it must have just been a bad class.
Yeah, maybe I should keep you away from Google for this one. But here I will, you know what I will say is, Yamamoto, did have a second start in case you missed it. He left his first game with a ERA of 45, allowing five runs in one inning and, went five innings, five scoreless.
To be fair. He probably wasn't comfortable in his first start because he was playing internationally. He's probably never done that before.
Right.
So then he went stateside. So that was kind of unfair. Like, that's a whole different time zone, different culture, and you just like
– He had to come back home.
I've never pitched abroad, so I'm not used to that.
Technically, with Major League Baseball, had never pitched abroad. That could very well have been a big part of it. So he came home, back to the United States – and shaved 38 runs off of his ERA. So we can sit here and we can clap for Joely, but how about Yoshinobu Yamamoto trimming 38 runs off that ERA? I don't know if it's possible to do much more.
I mean, that's good. That's good. Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's hard. You just, 99 is like the most. Some people do like that infinity thing. I guess those guys are really killing it. But it's about growth. So good job for him starting at the 45 mark to give him some room. I would have gone even higher if it was me in Major League Baseball. My goal was to just keep dropping. But some people don't have the drive that I have.
Shout out Pat Light. He knows what it's all about.
Right.
Growth.
Yeah.
That ERA right down.
Forgot the second part. He forgot to do the second part. But
you definitely nailed the first part. Whitlock in game four also looked great. His change looks great. That sweeper looks great. He looks great.
He doesn't like when you call it a sweeper.
He doesn't like it? Is he calling it a slicer?
He's vehemently against the sweeper terminology. He says, I heard the name gyro today, but that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, people are calling pitches all sorts of things. A gyro slider is, in my estimation, a slider. Is it not? Like gyroscopic spin on
today's
slider.
Game. Doesn't everything's a sweeper now?
I'm 90% sure a slider already has gyrometrics, whatever. I don't think it matters. He also looked good. Game four was a fun one. And what a way to kick it off. Bookending some wins. Heading into Oakland. Before we preview that, and before we wrap up our series review here, it's time to talk to our good friends over at Prize Picks. Time to embrace the debate a little bit here. In a split series, do we do series MVPs? Shouldn't. All things considered, you don't think so?
No, I mean, look, I understand there's a last place team. You need a little leeway, per se. But no, I feel like you got to win the series to have an MVP, because that's like usually the MVP is because you won something, but we didn't win anything. We split something. Like the MVP of like the World Series, it wouldn't go, you know what I mean? Like you give it to the winner, and there wasn't a
it
I know
can go
no
to the loser
tie in it that can. Situation, but you wouldn't give it to the winner.
It can go to the loser. Why not?
Technically.
I don't think we should be giving series MVPs. Also, calling them a last place team right now is crazy, because they're just not. They're just not a last place team. I mean, are they tied for last place? I think legally.
Okay.
Sure. Are they in third in terms of tiebreakers right now, if you go to the MLB app? Yeah. We got a third place team on our hands. Thank you very much. I love just jumping to like they are a last place team because they're projected to be. I mean, they will be. Right now, they're not.
That's what I'm doing.
Right now, they ain't, brother. If there was a series MVP, which I guess there's not supposed to be, I would sure argue that a fellow who went 4-for-10 with two homers and a double in his team debut, just south of the border of his home nation, would be a pretty good candidate. And that would be Tyler O'Neill, ladies and gentlemen. What an opening series from Tyler O'Neill. Welcome to the squad. Stick around. Please stick around. Please keep playing. Now, speaking of playing and continuing to play, what's your concern level / fucking... Do you think Kenley plays, dude? What's going on with Kenley? Is Kenley going to play baseball? Is Kenley going to... Is he viable? Is he too hurt to... What's going on? I know, I mean, he touched the mound. Is he going to continue to do that?
Yeah, I was going to say, they let him warm up. I guess they convinced him to warm up. Maybe it was the other way around. Yeah, I don't know. I think he's just old and banged up, and he knows he's on a last place team. And so if he's got an ailment of any kind, he's playing for the second half for when he gets traded to the Phillies or something. So I think that might be, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with it. It's been very weird. I do think the baseball world, or I mean the Red Sox world, is way overreacting to some earlier things. I took some jabs earlier, but I really don't think it's that dramatic of a situation. And the video that went out of him coming out into the bullpen, like the seventh inning, people were like, oh my God, he hates Boston. He hates being here. He doesn't want to pitch. I'm like, I don't know if you've ever seen him walk, but he always walks like that, like a fat kid in middle school. I don't know why, but that's just, he's just walking. I don't think he did it with any specific demeanor in mind. I think he was just going to the bullpen.
I think he was just walking. If I had to guess, I would say that was just him walking. It's a clip of a guy just moving. It's a clip of a guy walking. I think part of it is certainly the fact that it's a last place team. I mean, Kenley has been more vocal than anybody, and justifiably so, that he was told this team was not going to look like this. And now this team looks like this, and they're not supposed to look like this. So him not being happy about it, don't blame him at all. Couldn't possibly. I think you're right that if he's feeling a little thing, he's just not going to do it. He's not going to go out there, not going to push it, because like he could be slated to be on a contender in the second half. The Phillies is a fucking awesome pick. I would love to see Kenley in Philly. That's pretty fun. But he just the fact that there was so much talk around spring about him being hurt and him having this little thing and that little thing. And now the season is here. He pitches once. He looks good. And then it's just a little thing. Don't worry about it. It's just a little thing again. Don't worry about it. Makes me think like it might not just be a little thing. I might have to worry about it. And that's just, we've heard that before. And obviously things are supposed to be changing, new people in the building. But I don't like that. If there's anything to be reminiscent of last year, that's not one that I want around, is that being told like, ah, don't worry about it, it's just a little thing, just a little thing. If this team has any chance of competing, it's keeping every pitcher healthy. And that's, let me tell you, four games in, not entirely, I haven't been entirely dissuaded yet. So until I am, I'm going to keep believing that this team can bring me some joy. So especially if they play like they did in this series, dude, they could have very well won all four of these games. So I'm not ready to be like, the year's a total wash. Is it? Probably. Yeah. But keeping Kenley healthy is like a big factor to all of it. If there is going to be any glimmer of anything fun. A couple other little notes here before we start talking about ye olde Oakland Athletics. Bob played a little bit of baseball. Bob looks lost. Bob strikes out. That's what Bob does. Dude. But
the numbers are
staggering. It's like almost a 50% strikeout rate in major league
baseball. Like 100-ish at bats. Yeah, I also, that was the most infuriating thing when we decided to start losing in the middle of there, was that Bobby Dalbec on the opening day, fully healthy offensive, like Rob Refsnyder is the only one we're missing, and he was getting like high leverage at bats. Like he was in there for, you know, late in the game, guys on base need a hit. And Bobby Dees, who we're rolling with, I know it wouldn't have made sense to add to the outfield, but like Adam Duvall, $3 million, like that level of guy was so of it. Even CJ Cron, I would have just been like, at least he's not going to strike out half the time, you know?
Yeah. And the thing is, half is just not an exaggeration. That's like what it is. So, yeah, it's what it is. I'm willing to give Bob a long leash. Always have. I'm willing to extend that leash another year. Who cares? It's been four of them. I'll make it five. Who gives a shit? It's Bobby Dalbec. Now, this could probably be in our, somebody submitted a segment name for us. I wanted your thoughts on it.
Okay.
They said maybe we should replace clearing your brain of thoughts with Joey and Scott, with clearing the bases, dude. How do you like clearing the bases? Does that make a little bit more sense?
It doesn't even rhyme.
That's part of it. That is part of it. Clearing the bases with both of our faces.
It doesn't even rhyme. I don't get, what are we doing?
That one does with our faces, with both of our faces. What about that? Clearing our bases, clearing the bases with both of our faces.
I think it's, I don't know. I just feel like when you get, it'd be like you have a hit and it's like, why, what are we trying to tinker with that? You know, like every other part of the show stinks and that, but this part's perfect. So what are we doing? I feel like maybe clearing the bases. I like the name. Maybe that's closing thoughts, since you guys seem to have this. It's the same thing anyway. I know you like to convince yourself it's different. It's not, different. But different. Maybe we do. I don't know. I disagree. But I get the premise. I think most thoughts are interchangeable, and I think the one that you're about to do is interchangeable. And I think you would maybe agree with that. But you know, the shirt that comes out for the emptying our brain for thoughts with Joey and Scott is probably going to break. I mean, I don't know. They might have to ban it from Fenway because they're like, there's no more Red Sox apparel in here. That's my only thing about that. But clearing the bases is a way better name than it had I thought about it in the moment. I would have been like, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's our fault, honestly, for making the shirts orange, because then that really is pissing off the Sox. Yeah. They're like, look, Fenway can't be full of orange shirts. It's confusing.
Especially the opening day with the Orioles. It doesn't look good for them.
Right. That's police is already going to be pretty orange. Yeah. Opening day tickets right now, folks, are about $40. I checked it out. If you want to go the next day, they're about $8. Get on down, Fenway Park. Clearing my brain of thoughts with Joey and Scott, I got two of them. One, I was stunned to learn this week that Red Sox Stats, who I generally really like,
doesn't like Fenway Park. Insane.
What is that about?
I hated that a ton. I saw that and it was disheartening. And that's what everyone's reaction was. It's like, oh man, I thought I liked you.
Yeah. Brutal. Absolutely brutal. That's tough. He was talking about putting a retractable roof on a new park. And here's the thing. Had they in 99, when Fenway was a shithole, torn it down and moved it, it would have been very sad. But also, if like you go and you put a new ballpark in like the Seaport with a retractable roof, and it's like a nice modern ballpark, and it's like the home to all the winning and a massive improvement, I think that that's a conversation to have, and it's fine and it's cool. But like to do it now is so, I don't get it. Stats, it's one of the only cool things we got going is the ballpark. Other thing, MLB TV. If you don't have MLB TV, get MLB TV. It is the easiest. I say this every year, and I'll quote myself every year going forward. It is the easiest $150 to spend ever. Every year, opening day, to drop the 150, it feels like, oh, I'm dropping 150. Well, it's basically tickets to a game. It's basically, you know, a day at the ballpark, and you get a season's worth of all the games. They're not paying me to say this. This sounds like an ad. It's not. I love it so much that while I work from home, so to just be able to have 1 o'clock games on, or watching the Sox on my laptop, and throw the TV on, and switch between games. My big gripe was always that on the app on the TV, you can't do multiple screens. You could only watch one game at a time, and so it was a little tough, like switching back and forth between games. They introduced this year, I'm gonna mess up the name, I think it's First Pitch. I don't think that's right, but it's basically like a red zone for baseball every day. So if there's multiple games on, they'll have the multiple screen things. They'll switch the audio to the ones that matter, or they'll full screen a big at bat or something. It's cool. It's very cool. They're doing a good job with it. I like it very much. So I've been watching that. And that's really my only empty in my brain of thoughts with Joey and Scott, unless you got something else.
No, I didn't know you could do that. That's very interesting. I have it, and I did not know I could do that. No thoughts. Never, rarely do. So, I guess we should just do the pitching preview then.
The what?
The pitching preview.
Oh, is that's the part where like you give us the pitchers, and, like the matchups and stuff.
I mean, I guess we could, yeah. If that's how you want to do it, it's kind of your thing.
Is that not how we do it? Oh, you mean like pitching preview?
This is your time.
Okay, folks, the Red Sox head to the most historic Coliseum in the world for three games. Game one is going to be Tanner Houck versus Joe Boyle. Tanner Houck rounds out the back of this Red Sox rotation, making his first start of the year after making 21 starts last year and posting a 5.01 ERA and a 91 ERA plus. He put up a 2.40 ERA this spring over 15 innings with a sub-1 whip. Joe Boyle started the first three games of his career last year with the A's and was pretty good, 8.4 K per nine. He was born in Missouri, went to high school in Kentucky, played college in Indiana, and now plays in Oakland. This poor bastard. Game two is going to be Brian Baio versus Alex Wood. Brian Baio's opening day start was a beaut, allowing his only runs on a homer, but only striking out two in five innings. Baio got rocked for the last time he faced the A's last July. But wouldn't you know it, Scott? 12:37 start time that game. Unfortunately, those stats do not count. Alex Wood on opening day tossed 3 1/3 and gave up 6 runs to the Cleveland Literal Guardians, kicking off the year with a, you guessed it, 16.20 ERA. But hey, that's room for improvement. Game three is going to be Nick Pivetta versus Ross Stripling. Nick Pivetta is Canadian, starting the year in the 93rd percentile of strikeout percentage and 89th percentile in chase percentage. And good news for him, the A's are terrible. Ross Stripling went 5 innings against those same Guardians with 7 hits and 2 walks. Dude sucks. And that is going to do it for your pitching preview. Now, one thing we forgot to do last week was a little segment we call Your Shot. We forgot to do it. And I probably would have picked Tyler O'Neill or Emmanuel Valdez. Maybe even that guy, Rafi Devers. Knowing my friend Scott here, you probably would have gone with like Cassis or Bobby Dalbec. Maybe it would have been Pablo. Devers.
I picked.
Nope.
Devers deleted the team in home runs. It would have gone with Devers.
Well, we don't have to do a shoulda, coulda, woulda this time around. We can actually get your real answer. Who are you going to pick for this Oakland Athletics series? Call Your Shot.
I would have been right. Wrong prediction. One of 36 or whatever we're looking for. So I basically already did pick Devers, but it's okay. I'll let you have that. In this scenario, you would have picked who didn't do anything, but it's okay.
What about this one? This series. Give me your call, your shot for this series.
Man, you have so much time to prepare, and yet I didn't. Let's go Rafaela.
Oh, I like that pick. I like that pick. I don't like it as much as I like Tristan Cassis joining the club. Everybody's hitting bombs, getting started. He's joining the club. He's got to stay in the hunt with Devers. Actually, he's got to stay in the hunt with O'Neill right now. So I'm going to go with Tristan Cassis. We will figure out what the call your shot bet is going to be, because I don't think anything came of it last year, because I won it in a buzzer beater, fair and square. And Steve, he owes me something. I don't know. He just gave me some shoes yesterday, but I don't think that really counts. It's honestly, I felt a little bit like the Salvation Army, like he was donating to me. So I didn't really appreciate that. So Will, thanks a lot, man. And so we will figure out something that carries a little bit more weight for our call your shot bet. Closing thoughts.
Car.
Scott's internet is going crazy. What's going on? Your car? We're betting your car?
Yeah, or maybe each other's cars. Maybe one, the winner gets each car, like both cars. We'll put them both up.
I think it's the winner gets your Tesla. Let's do it that way. All right, I'm going to take the internet buffering silence as agreement. So there we go. We figured it out. Scott is offering up his Tesla to the winner of this year's Call Your Shot.
Car,
my Mazda is not in play. It's not in play.
I feel like I'm losing either way, bro. I'm losing this one either way.
Well, no, I mean, there's a reality where you get to keep your Tesla, and I think that's pretty big. That's a good enough prize. So
yeah, that was a good bet for me.
Yeah, there we go. Perfect. All right. Thank you so much, Scott, for putting your Tesla on the line. I got a closing thought. It ain't nothing too big. But I went to March Madness, went to the Elite Eight at the Garden. It was my second ever basketball game that I had ever gone to. I went to Celtics Clippers Valentine's Day 2018 with my dad. As everybody does on Valentine's Day.
Okay, you go that see your just first. Got weirder by the word. Okay. Yeah. that was fun.
Sat courtside with my dad for my first ever Celtics game on Valentine's Day, 2018, 22 years old. Don't know what I was doing there, but that's where the world led me. And I'm glad it did because it's now led me here where I got to go to the Elite Eight. If you haven't gone to the Rafters, folks, I understand. Going to Celtics games, incredibly expensive. Going to Bruins games, even more expensive. If you can find any way to get yourself into the Rafters Club, do it. If you didn't see it on my Instagram story, well, you missed it. It's gone now. But unbelievable setup up there. Unbelievable. You sit on couches, Scott. You sit on couches to watch a
game. Yeah. I saw that and I was wondering how you did that, how either of you got that. And the only thing I come up with is, I don't know, maybe Elaine has connections. I don't know.
I don't even know who that is.
Because Steve was like, how did this happen? And I was like,
yeah.
I don't talk to those guys. We're fake friends. We just do.
What happened? I mean, it was out of nowhere. It was like the day before. He was just like, I have an extra ticket. Come. And I was like, yeah, rock on. I love hoop. I don't love betting on hoop anymore after that game. But the Rafters Club is unbelievable. If you guys can stomach up, I think they're like $400 a seat. So like it's crazy. But like if you're planning on going to four games over the year and they're gonna be like $100 each, go to one game. And make it in the rafters. That's all I gotta say. Do you have a closing thought?
Don't record podcasts in your parents' if your parents' Wi-Fi stinks at your parents' house on Easter.
It's awful. This is the Wi-Fi that I was talking about while you weren't on the show sooner, and now it's here and you're on the show.
Yeah, except I moved out like a long time ago, so I feel like there was room there. Like every conversation you had about adding me was post moving out. So I don't.
Oh well,
it's okay.
Retrospect, hindsight, 2020.
Yeah,
just like your internet upload speed. Okay, here we go, folks. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us. Prize Picks. Thank you to Prize Picks. Use code CLNS at Prize Picks. And we will see you after this riveting series against the Oakland Athletics. I hope you guys do not like getting sleep. Hopefully we can get some fun late night Nesson content, although they've adjusted to the time. So we're probably not going to get it. And also, the guy who leads the booth doesn't really lend himself to having a whole bunch of fun. So, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back this Wednesday. For Scott Neville, I'm Joey Capone. Go Sox, kid.